Okay, Todd Cook, wastewater superintendent for the city of Homer. If anyone has any questions for Todd about these microbes, get to a whole other set of questions here about the reservoir and about the uphill side of all of this. So if you have any questions for Todd, that's 235-7721, or you can email your questions to info@kbbi.org. And Todd, where were we about...
So, go ahead. I want to answer that guy's question. So we separate the water from the liquid, which is all wastewater's mission, every wastewater treatment plant. We put the solids in another tank where we allow the bacteria to break it down farther. And then from those tanks, they're pumped to the ponds, which some people may have seen behind Public Works. And they're further break down the solids. And then in the summertime, we will pump the solids out of that pond into what we call drying beds. We allow them to dry, and which further kills off bacteria. And then there's a process we go through with the state and the borough. And then basically those solids, at that point, we call them biosolids. You can add, some plants will add grass and other organic material to make compost. Our stuff is not hot enough at that point to break down the other additives, so we don't really make compost. But the landfill takes it and uses it for soil reclamation. So as they cover their mounds of trash with dirt, they'll take our biosolids and they grow grass on there to keep the erosion from washing the dirt off of their piles in their cells that they make. So that's what we do with the solids. Then the liquid, once we've separated it, we run it through some UV lights, and UV inactivates pathogenic bacteria. And then from there is discharged about 2,200 feet, basically a half a mile off Bishop's Beach. And we do sample out in the bay periodically based on EPA regulations to ensure that we're not contaminating or sending anything out there that we don't want out in our environment.
Well, thanks Finley Abbott for that question. But that's all downhill. That's the plant at Heath Street at the bottom next to the animal shelter across the street from the post office. Let's move uphill now to Diamond Ridge, where the reservoir and the drinking water treatment, is that correct? Can you take me on a short path from the reservoir to the sewage treatment plant? And then I'm going to get a little more specific about what happens at the plant up near the reservoir.
Okay. So we're not to correct you, but we're actually on Skyline, not Diamond Ridge.
Skyline. I beg your pardon.
That's okay. So Bridge Creek Reservoir, was some people are familiar where that's at. It's Crossman. Bridge Creek was dammed years ago and created a reservoir. There's a white building down there that people will see. That is our pump house. Let's leave it white. Please don't paint it for us like some of the other structures. And then just inside the reservoir, there's a cage near that building. That's what we call our intake. So we draw water out of the reservoir. We have three pumps in that building. And depending on how much water we need, we'll dictate how many pumps we run. We pump it up the hill to the Skyline treatment plant, and then it goes basically through the treatment plant. We do our thing there.
Well, but what's in there?
Okay. You wanted a path, or
Let's do the whole path. You're right.
Okay. So from there, we go into what we call our contact tank to that big blue tank on the hill. And then from there, gravity feeds to town. We have pressure reducing stations because we're up so high, we would create very high pressure conditions down here.
White water.
Blowing people off their toilets. So we have two trunk lines. We call them trunk lines. We have an east trunk and a west trunk. Water guys, we keep things very simple. And the water comes down through those two trunks and feeds town. We feed east side over about Fireweed area, and then down to the east road out to K Drive and around to the Spit. The west side, we feed just a little bit up Sterling Highway, and then Old Town, and of course the residential area around the schools and the park and the hospital. And then from there, it goes through people's homes. They open their faucets, flush their toilets, and it makes its way all the way back to the wastewater treatment plant. And we put it back in the environment, it evaporates, rains, snow, back into the reservoir, and it's just a constant cycle we call the hydrological cycle.
And back up to the Skyline plant, what's happening at the Skyline plant? Well, first of all, because Homer, I have here the 2019 water quality study, and you have a copy of that too. And I'm wondering, what is it that you do to this water that makes it win awards throughout municipalities and that we get cited for or accolades about having really drinkable water and really good water? And it, so what makes it that way?
Well, our source, for one, we start with good water, so that makes our job a little easier. As opposed, we're what's called surface water. We're an open reservoir that's influenced by the environment, as opposed to what we would call groundwater, which comes out of a well. So typically groundwater has minerals and potentially on the Kenai Peninsula, there's a lot of arsenic, things like that, that you have to treat. And the more treatment you have to do, sometimes it involves more chemicals and it can affect your taste. Surface water like us, because of the bacteria and algae, can affect our taste also. But Bridge Creek is really pretty good water. It's spring fed, snow melt for the most part. So what we do with that, then in 2009, we upgraded the treatment here in Homer, and we went to what's called ultrafiltration, which removes viruses, bacteria, things like that, plus some
right, because COVID isn't the only, this isn't your first virus.
No, and COVID is not really a super virus. It's pretty easily inactivated, as Mariana had kind of mentioned a little bit earlier.
If you just do the few simple things you need to do,
That's right. So our membranes, and since you brought that up.
Here, let me get you closer to that mic. You go ahead and talk. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's fine.
So based on information from Mayo Clinic, coronavirus is about what we call a micron. It's a 0.12 of a micron in diameter. And to give you a little quick little reference, a human hair is 50 microns, typically. The human eye cannot see below 40 micron. Typical bacteria is 0.2 micron. So bacteria is bigger than a virus. Some information I got from the Southern Peninsula Hospital site gave a range for the size of the COVID, which is 0.06 to 1.4 microns. So they're showing a little bit lower than the Mayo Clinic. But either way, our filters, we filter down to what's called to 0.04 micron. So we have a 0.02, which that sounds like a pretty tight range. But when you're talking about microorganisms,
microns,
that
right?
are only, yeah. So it's we have a physical barrier, physically will not allow the viruses into the drinking water. But should that fail, because they're man-made and things fail, we disinfect with chlorine. And according to the WHO, World Health Organization, a chlorine concentration of 0.5 milligrams per liter for at least 30 minutes of contact at a pH of less than 8 will inactivate viruses. And so we have one of the tanks on the hill that I described in the path is our contact tank. Typically, the water going into that tank is about 1.3 parts per or milligrams per liter. So it's almost three times what WHO says we need. And then the contact tank, I figured up for 4th of July, which is typically our busiest weekend, we use almost 800,000 gallons in town. We had a chlorine concentration of 1.39 going into the tank and coming out, it was still at a 0.8. So that's still well above the 0.5 milligrams per liter that WHO says we should have. And the contact time was 4.5 hours as opposed to 30 minutes. So we are, and our pH was 7.8. So we are well above what all the experts out there are saying we need to do to protect our drinking water from not just coronaviruses. There's other viruses out there that, you know, Cryptosporidium has killed tons of people down south in various outbreaks over the last 10, 20 years. One outbreak, they had hundreds of thousands of people going to hospital and a bunch of people dying down in, I want to say around Milwaukee. I'd have to double check. Anyhow, there's a lot of things that we daily are protecting our people from, our community from, in drinking water, even just Giardia. But these filters take all of that out. And like I say, as a backup, we do chlorine disinfection. And then because of EPA regulation, we maintain a chlorine residual in the drinking water system because water will degrade over time as it sits in the pipe. And that is the only reason EPA requires that is if there's a water main break, you've now exposed your water to the environment again. So they want us to keep a chlorine residual in there as a safeguard to protect our water. So then once the pipe is put back together and based on the conditions when we have a main break, we can we chlorinate our fittings and the pieces we use to put things, put the pipe back together. That's all disinfected before we put it all back together too, to help ensure that we're protecting public health.
And are you going off this, when does the 2020, when did this 2019 water, drinking water quality report come out?
So this report, and this confuses some people, this is posted on our website.
Yeah, it's on the city's website, easy to get to.
And we are required by EPA to mail this to every one of our customers. EPA requires that it's out by, in the customer's hand by June 30 of the year. So we can't post 2020 results because we still have 6 months worth of results to gather.
Gotcha.
And so a lot of people will call and they're like, hey, all I see is the old report. And I'm like,
no, this is the current.
The most current. And if you go back and look historically, like trends we were talking about earlier with Mariana, if you trend this data that's in this over the past few years, you will see that there's not a lot of significant change. So to really know what's going on for the next 6 months, we have an idea of what we're going to see because we've been doing this process for years here. So there's no significant change. But some people sometimes don't understand that, you know, they want March's, you know, they want to know what happened in March 2020. Well, we're not required to put that out. Somebody has, we do have people that call that have health issues. They're looking to put in a business or something and they want to know water quality. And I will take the time and look up samples and give them that information. But we're not required to put this whole report out because we don't have a year's worth of data yet. I hope that makes sense.
Oh, sure. And also the same is true for this, like when we're talking about the COVID data that you're getting, mm-hmm. all of this is just a few months. And the hope is that the city will keep up with this study long enough that that becomes baseline data and you can really look at trends.
And that's that baseline, that's a key term. So you're right, it's early. You know, we've been doing it for a couple months, but in this business, that's not always enough data. I imagine we'll see probably EPA regulating some of this in the next few years, probably requiring systems to do this kind of testing more regular at that point. But it's hard to say what you're going to do. We have seven sample sheets here, eight sample sheets. I mean, you can't make major decisions based on that because you don't have the trend. And we're still, as a nation and as a world, we're still figuring this out. I mean, how often does the news change as to what...
We're still learning lots of new things.
What the facts are, right. we're far enough into it now. I think we have some really good data on what this virus does and doesn't do. But at our level... And also with these kind of tests, the more numbers you have, a lot of it is about averages, right? So you test Chicago, you have higher numbers, you have a bigger population, your estimates will be closer because you have more numbers to work with, right? We're Podunk-Homer, we have, our population about 5,000 that contributes to the wastewater, and so our data, we have less data to work with, essentially. It took us a while to even see a detect. But we knew we had cases the EOC was saying data from the hospital. We had cases in Homer. We had positive cases, but we weren't seated in the sewer. So it's kind of a numbers game. And like I said, these bigger towns, Massachusetts, Paris had really good success using this. And I hear Salt Lake is going to start doing this testing like regularly, like all year. I read an article in one of the trade magazines on Utah getting behind, or Salt Lake getting behind us. But you're talking hundreds of thousands of people. So they'll get more usable data quicker than we will.
And in the latest report from BioBot, what is the estimate they have of the number of people who are using the city water system? Because it does come down to a number, right? They project X amount of...
What they do is they estimate it. So the initial, and I'll leave these with you.
Cool. I'll make sure to share them.
They had, estimated, I'm looking for one because these were non-detached.
Okay, well, you look while I tell people that we're coming up, we're 15 minutes away from the end of this show, so it's kind of last call for questions, just to make sure that that Todd has time to answer it. 235-7721 is the number to call. Oh, and here's Howard on line one.
Hey,
Howard, go ahead.
This is not COVID-related, but is it okay to ask
that's,
a question?
Yeah, we're here for all things wastewater.
Okay.
And
so
drinking water.
And water.
From time to time, driving across the Beluga Slough there, it can be quite odorous. And I've heard stories about where that odor comes from. Some people say it comes from the sewage treatment plant. Some people say it just comes from the Beluga Lake when the tide's out. And I'm wondering if you know anything about that.
Todd?
Yeah.
Where's that smell coming from?
From McDonald's. No, I'm kidding. So I can tell you it does not come from the treatment plant. If it ever comes from the treatment plant, we're not doing our job because we work with what's called aerobic bacteria. But what I can tell you is at times, and there are times that it is the sewer system, our sewer main from the spit crosses the Beluga Slough, and we have a lift station there. We're doing some treatment in that lift station to reduce the smell. We have carbon filters we put on there, and they, like any carbon filter, they need to be changed regularly. We have a regular schedule, but at times like 4th of July weekend, when we get overloaded, we can't always get to it right away. But I will also tell you, and there are times when people will call, and I've had people get kind of uppity with me on the phone, and I have asked them to go ahead and come down and meet me at the slough, and I will show them, you know what they're smelling. Usually in the spring, the slough is odoriferous. The reason being, there's plant material, humic material that is settling in the slough and it's breaking down, and then in the springtime, the winds typically change at the slough and they're blowing inland. Where we get most of our complaints, it's usually the slough. There are times when it is the lift station. We try to stay on top of that. But most of the time when people call, it is the slough. That material that breaks down in the slough, it creates methane gas, which is the exact same gas that's created and released in the collection system. So we get blamed a lot for that. But I'm not going to say that it's always the slough. But there are times when I have gone down, and we respond to all calls. And so people call and complain. We will go down and check our lift station and make sure our filters are fresh. But a lot of times, it is the slough. Another way that I can tell quickly is as I'm driving across the slough. When you're about in the middle of the slough is where the lift station is. If you get a quick odor there, and then as you continue off the slough, you don't smell it as much, it's probably our lift station. And we will, like I said, we will respond. A lot of times when I get calls and I drive out to check it out, I get that odor as soon as I get onto the slough, just past the light. That is the slough itself, because there's so much of that material out there that has been breaking down. And as the weather warms up, it releases those gases, which are hydrogen sulfide and methanes, the exact same stuff we have in the sewer. So we kind of get a black eye from that once in a while, but, anyhow, that I hope that answers that question.
What do you think, Howard? Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, that's great. So, okay. Do you have time for one more quick one?
Go ahead.
Between the lake is quite gaseous, as I understand, and the sewer treatment plant, have we ever looked at the possibility of using any of that methane for, say, like power source for the sewage treatment plant or anything like that, or has that been looked into, do you know?
Okay, Howard, I'm going to let you take that one off air, if you don't mind, so I can get another caller on the line. But Todd, go ahead.
I've been in Homer for 10 years. I don't know that any study has been done. The slough, I've been told, there is a lot of methane gas at the back of the slough. That's why they say in the wintertime, stay off the ice at the back of the lake.
Oh, I've seen the bubbles.
That's methane, and that warms up the ice, and then you can have other problems. Yeah. Our sewer treatment plant, like I said earlier, we use what's called an aerobic treatment process, so we keep things aerated because we want to minimize the methane production. So the sewer treatment plant probably does not produce enough methane because of our treatment process. So there are treatment plants that go anaerobic, and that's where you really get the methanes and the H2S, which is what's happening in the slough under that rotting material. So that's a good question, but because of our treatment process, we just would not produce enough to make it cost effective.
Okay, Kent is on the line, I think. Kent, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Yes, I had a question. What system do we have, a primary, secondary? I'm sure we don't have a tertiary. And what is the criteria that triggers one, necessitating one over the other?
Todd?
So we are secondary treatment. The quality of your effluent, I believe in most places, would trigger what type of treatment you need. Up until 91, the Homer was like a lot of systems in Alaska. We just had ponds, which is anaerobic, which is those methane producers. So the sewage would go into a pond. They would screen out the rags and junk like that, and then just allow bacteria to break it down. And then as sewage flows in, then the liquid on the other end would flow out. So I believe with Kachemak Bay being hit critical habitat and change in EPA regulations, my predecessor saw the writing on the wall, and there was some monies for innovative treatment. And our deep shaft, by the way, is up until about 4 years ago, is the only one in North America. About 4 years ago, Dawson City put one in just like ours, and I've been up there and seen it. They've asked me to come up and do some consulting with on their plant. So there's only two of these in all North America, but we are secondary, which means we use bacteria. So just to clarify, primary is a mechanical removal of the sewage. Secondary is bacteriological, and tertiary, as a gentleman mentioned, is usually a chemical polishing. And a lot of places that use tertiary, like in California, they're using that for what we call reclaimed water being pumped back into people's homes for flushing toilets. So you're not wasting drinking water to flush a toilet. They use it for agriculture because it's high in nutrients, phosphorus and nitrogen. So that was a good question. Thank you.
Thanks, Kent. Did that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. So, Todd, I know we have on the list here to talk about, let's go back up to the reservoir.
Okay.
You've been getting questions, the city has been getting questions about, is it okay to swim in the reservoir? Right?
We have.
So can you talk about that? You made a, we're all wearing masks, so it's hard to gauge.
It's hard to read body language.
You made a face with your eyes there.
It is, I will say that there's a sign. We had a sign, so we had somebody call and said that the sign was gone, which we knew the snowplow clipped it. So we were in the process of remaking the sign. The sign posted at the reservoir does say no swimming, no motorized vehicles there.
So a rowboat?
That's not swimming.
I was just about to say, so a rowboat would be your exception?
There are plenty of people kayaking. And,
there are.
And so the area that the reservoir is in, we call the watershed. The watershed is all the high ground around it that allows water or anything to drain into that reservoir. There are restrictions in the watershed. Some of that's put on by planning. No campfires, no shooting, things like that. From a water treatment standpoint, if everybody wanted to go up there and take a bath, it wouldn't hurt our drinking water. But there is a signpost that says no swimming.
Okay. And is there an adequate water supply for this community?
Last year, we did get a little bit lower. A lot of places in the state had a drought.
Well, across the bay, they had serious shortages.
They also had maintenance issues. That was part of they had leaks that they hadn't addressed prior to that. So they lost their water sooner than they should have. As of right now, I did not bring my numbers. I apologize. I figured this out last year as to what that reservoir holds. Our intake will go down 20 feet. That reservoir is 40 feet deep in the middle. So we can pump half of that reservoir into into our system. There are springs in the back that feed it, and then any snow melt. We had a little more snow this year than we did last year. The reservoir is looking pretty good right now. It's July. We're still going over the overflow. Last year, though, August, we were totally not going over the overflow. We dropped 2 or 3, 4 inches, which is not really a whole lot. That's 37 square acre surface area. And I had figured out how many billions of gallons are in there last year for council. But I forgot to bring the numbers. So from our standpoint, we have plenty of water to make it through the rest of the summer. We're in good shape. We have a really good reservoir, good recharge.
Well, the last thing I have on my list is to ask you to introduce your team. And if they're the shy, reclusive type and don't want their name shouted out, I understand. You can absolutely call them out by name. But I'm talking about the division of labor, how many people it takes to run the plants. Like, what does the team look like?
So we have basically two teams. Excuse me. We have
That's not a COVID cough.
That's not a COVID cough.
Okay.
Smoker's cough.
Okay.
On the treatment side, we have four operators that are certified by state. We're required to be certified and continue our education to maintain certification. And we have two mechanics. So there's six of us on the treatment side. And then once it leaves a treatment plant, we have to have somebody maintain all the piping and the pressure stations and all that. And we have five guys over there that do that. And we have got a couple of new guys on board. But I can say I've been here 10 years, and this is probably the best crew that we've had. We had some really good guys in the past, but these guys are they're a little bit younger, and they're ready to move forward. They're maintaining. We've increased our maintenance, and we've seen a reduction in call-outs because the guys are being proactive in our maintenance as opposed to reactive. And so I got a great crew. You can't you start with good water, and but I can't do my job. We can't get water awards if we don't have good people. And our water treatment plant is the largest membrane filter plant in the state for drinking water. Some of the mines and stuff use it because it's such good treatment. And we have the deep shaft, which I said there's only two of them in North America. So Homer is, my previous boss used to say, we're cutting edge. And we are. We have very innovative and technical treatment processes here in Homer. We're very blessed to have a good source of water. And we got great people running them. My crew is, I've been doing this in this state for 20 years. I know a lot of the top operators in this state. Our guys are right up there with all those guys.
Well, thank you, Todd Cook, wastewater superintendent for the city of Homer, and also to Mariana Matis, CEO of BioBot Analytics in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'm Kathleen Gustafson, and this has been The Coffee Table. Thanks, Todd. Thanks for being on today. If you want to leave some of that information with me, and I'll also get some links from the city website to the studies. Do the BioBot studies get posted on the city website? I was unable to find those.
I'm a treatment guy, not a computer guy.
You don't know. No. Okay.
I don't know, but I mean, it's something that can be done if you want to post them. This is all public knowledge, so I have no problem leaving this here.
Great. Thanks a lot, and we'll get it shared out to people. Thanks for being on The Coffee Table.
Thanks for having me.